Photographer Greta Rivas has always had a hot spot for warm water. Growing up in Idaho, she learned to swim in a hot springs pool. And later, when her family moved to Japan, they made regular use of the local community baths. Several years ago, she set out to document how people around the world use thermal waters and hot springs. The result is a stunning and evocative book detailing the unique topographies, regional uses, and cultural meanings of 23 different hot springs in 12 countries. The book's called Hot Springs, Photos and Stories of How the World Soaks, Swims, and Slows Down. Greta's joining us today from her home in Maine to share her fascination with what she calls earthly riots and unexpected geological twists. Greta, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Rick. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, this is, you know, a lot of people encounter a lot of hot springs in their travels, and they could appreciate a little bit of context. And your book is a great way to get the big picture about what hot springs are all about. And you started off by mentioning that the world's first official national park was because of hot water.
Yeah, Yellowstone National Park was established partially to protect the natural wonders of Yellowstone, including hot springs. And so a lot of what I was fascinated by with this book was the different ways that people used and enjoyed and protected hot water, this one natural phenomena that emerges from the earth in what feels like a million different ways, a million different colors, temperatures, and then so many different ways that human beings take that natural phenomena and enjoy it.
And it occurred to me, we just turn on the hot shower now or fill up our hot tubs now, and we don't even think twice about where does the heat come from. But back in 1872, when President Ulysses S. Grant founded the first national park, hot water, wow, was a big deal. And reading through your book, in all these corners of the planet, I kept imagining most of these thermal springs were appreciated before there was electricity. And
yeah.
Hot water was must have been a marvel.
I thought about that so much. In one hot spring in Greenland, the structure of the hot spring, like a very simple natural pool, had been built thousands of years ago, likely by the Norse. And so you could be soaking in a hot bath used by people thousands of years ago, and just thinking about how harsh that life might have been, and what a joy and an anomaly it must have been to even experience the feeling of being submerged in hot water.
You know, Greta, I was just in Iceland, you know, and I've been up in Scandinavia lately. And I just think, whoa, imagine the days when you had no relief from the cold and your world was just a soggy, wet, dark, you know, dark blanket.
Yeah.
And then you plop into this magically hot thermal pool. You just go, whoa, which one of the gods gave this to me and what do I do to get more of it?
I know. And I think one of the things that I love about hot springs so much is it is easy to take for granted how miraculous nature is. And to be literally immersed in it, to just be sitting in a bit of a wonder of nature, it's so invigorating and restful at the same time. And each little corner of the globe has its own feeling. And I especially find that in hot springs. You can go in the water and it might have a different viscosity or color, or it might feel different to the skin. And paying attention to this type of feeling of being in nature is something that I love so much about being a person alive on this planet, but I especially feel it in hot springs.
You know, when we think about this wonder of hot springs, Greta, I noticed your parents, you mentioned in the introduction, honeymooned in hot springs. So did my parents. I mean, and I thought, whoa, we've got something in common here. Our families appreciate hot springs. My parents honeymooned in Harrison Hot Springs up in Banff and Jasper in Canada. And then also we both grew up with hot springs, you in the Rockies and me in the Olympics. I remember when I was a kid, we'd vacation at the Olympic Hot Springs and we'd go hiking to the next hot springs. So we grew up and tuned into that. And I suppose that gave you a predisposition to being on the lookout for hot springs. And in your book, by the way, this is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Greta Rivas, and her book is Hot Springs, Photos and Stories of How the World Soaks, Swims, and Slows Down. Greta is a photojournalist who specializes in documenting human connections to the natural world. Her website is gretarivas.com, and that's R-Y-B-U-S. Greta, as I enjoyed your book, the photography was just gorgeous. You've collected a wonderful variety of hot springs. I love this idea that some of them look like palaces, others like a hole in the ground. Some of them feel like a party and others feel like a prayer. Let's talk about these. Tell me about a hot springs that strikes you as a palace.
Gellert Hot Spring in Budapest. Mm. Oh my gosh. I walked in and I did not expect to be moved to the degree that I was by Gellert. It is just beautifully mosaic. The light filters into the space through these upper domed skylights. And what's fascinating about it is it feels like a palace, but it's used by a lot of local people as part of their daily routine or part of a medical treatment prescribed by doctors. And I think I was so moved by how beautiful this space was, but it was still designed to serve a utility for the public.
You know, that is interesting because anybody that goes to Budapest is finding that the thermal baths there are like number one on your sightseeing list. And I like to think of soaking in a thermal bath as a great equalizer. I was in Iceland soaking in a bath. And, you know, you could be sitting next to the prime minister. You could be sitting next to a school teacher. You could be sitting next to somebody who's well into their retirement. And everybody's the same in the hot tub.
Exactly.
In Budapest, it's a great equalizer, but it also equalizes everybody up at a higher level because you're in under this palatial dome with, like you said, these lavish mosaics. And people just stuffed into their Speedos. And it's just a wonderful kind of crazy luxury.
Well, I do find that there are some places that have a lot of pride in the way that hot springs can be an equalizer, especially in Iceland. A lot of people said, you know, the president of Iceland comes here and he just chit-chats with us in the locker room, just talking with the people that collect rubbish. Graphic designers, everyone's here all together. And there is something really special about everyone being the same and able to speak casually.
That may be the appeal across cultures for having this zone where people can be together. So we talked about a palatial hot springs, Greta. Some of them are just a hole in the ground. Tell us about a particularly desolate feeling hot springs that struck you as worth including in your book.
I included a chapter about Nevada's hot springs in the American West, and I feature the only truly wild hot springs. So that means there's no one selling a ticket, there's no staff, there's no dedicated caretaker. Hmm. So I didn't include the names of the specific hot springs so that they could have a little buffer of protection. And those hot springs are some of the most magical, but they're also among the least reliable. It's possible that you could show up and too much algae grew, or perhaps a herd of wild donkeys wandered through and caused a mess. So I always say that when you visit a hot spring, you are the caretaker of that hot spring for the time being. And that is especially so with the wild hot springs like in Nevada.
That's beautiful. Very important. And you talk about hot springs as a prayer.
Yeah.
And I was particularly struck by the one in India. Can you explain that whole idea of a hot spring?
One of the most striking hot springs in India are two temple hot springs on either side of the Parvati River in Himachal Pradesh. One is Sikh and one is Hindu, and they coexist side by side and share a similar origin story about the creation of the hot spring. But the people that visit each hot spring temple are having a very different internal spiritual experience that is very potent to them. It's a very remarkable and striking experience to visit a temple structure that is billowing with steam, in which people may visit to cleanse their body because that's the most accessible space to have a bath or a shower. Mm-hmm. And that experience of cleansing their body is sandwiched by a specific type of prayer or spiritual experience.
And what a spiritual environment to have that steam coming out and to have that purification and to be tuned into that as a visitor, to be tuned, not judgmental, but tuned into it and to kind of celebrate and go with it.
Exactly.
Greta Rivas is with us from her home in Portland, Maine, as she helps us understand the unique personalities of hot springs around the world. Greta profiles 23 of her favorites from a dozen countries in her book, Hot Springs, photos and stories of how the world soaks, swims, and slows down. You can view more of her work from a link in today's show notes at ricksteves.com/radio. I've always felt, Greta, when I'm enjoying a hot springs, that there's an etiquette. And in fact, a lot of times I'm a little tentative because I'm not sure what the etiquette is. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a very quick review of, you know, etiquette for travelers who are going to experience a hot spring, especially in another culture?
I think the number one rule is to read the room. So if you show up at a hot spring and people that are already there are quiet and not talking amongst themselves, that's typically the best way to proceed. Mm-hmm. Some hot springs feel very energetic and excitable, and it's completely fine to experience them that way. But take a quick temperature gauge of the tone of that space. Go with the local vibe. Similarly, it can feel intimidating to visit a place and not know how much or how little to wear. So looking to see how the locals are dressed can help you feel comfortable.
That's an interesting dimension to it, because I've gone to thermal springs in Germany with German friends, and I turn around and they're naked. Mm-hmm. And I realize, well, this is a big shocking thing to me because I'm an American. But for them, it's just, so what? Of course we're naked. We're all naked under our clothing.
Right.
That's a very important thing for American travelers especially to be comfortable with, that in other cultures, they don't giggle or they don't get overwhelmed with embarrassment or they don't think it's particularly sexy or anything. No. It's just honest with nature. Japan has an even term for it, skinship. What does that mean?
Skinship is a platonic way of being with other people while nude. And so typically that's experienced in a onsen or sento, the two most common types of public baths in Japan. I did hear from a lot of people who grew up with this type of experience, felt a sort of comfort and kinship with their body that I think a lot of Americans might not feel, because we haven't been able to have this relationship with nudity that's not sexualized, that it becomes a lot less scary and more normalized just to be ourselves.
We're exploring the world's thermal waters right now with photojournalist Greta Ribas. She features 23 hot springs in 12 different countries in her book, Hot Springs, photos and stories of how the world soaks, swims, and slows down. You can follow Greta on Instagram under the handle at Greta Ribas. I like to talk a little bit about taking the waters. My experience is mostly Europe, but anywhere I've traveled where I've encountered thermal hot springs, culturally, it's a cure. What's the physiological value, first of all, in the minerals in the water? That's one thing that hot springs have in common. It's geothermal heated water, right?
The way that I think about it is that geothermal water is groundwater that has gone on a bit of a journey. It's gone to an inner part of the earth, and when it came back up, it brought minerals.
Generally, there are minerals, and these are curative in a lot of cases, or at least considered curative.
Yeah, and depending on who you talk to, they're finding medicine in either just the heat or the mineral content or both. I didn't make very many wellness claims in this book. It wasn't quite the goal of the book. But as a person interested in anthropology, I'm interested in the personal experiences and stories about hot springs. And people had a lot of personal experiences about wellness.
Well, even people drink the water. I mean, I've been in spas where everybody lines up to drink the water. It never tastes good, but it apparently people believe it's good for you.
Yeah, in Budapest, someone gave me a steaming cup of geothermal water, and it tasted exactly like I would have expected it to. Heavy, mineral-rich, sulfuric. But a lot of people told me stories often about their grandmother bottling up hot water to bring home to apply to their joints at home.
Well, the first Roman emperors used to go up to Baden-Baden for their rheumatism, apparently.
Yeah.
And outside of London, the town of Bath was, in ancient times, Aquasulis, a place where people went for health reasons. I think what put it on the map was there was a belief that it helped with fertility. And there's the modern situation of a doctor in Germany saying, you need to go to the Black Forest and soak in a hot spring for the next fortnight. What is it with the taking the waters that really makes sense today?
In our lives, we often talk about this feeling of moving too fast. And the antidote to that is to slow down. I think we also often feel a bit of disconnection to nature, and oftentimes we really don't need to do that much to receive the benefits of nature. It's very common that a lot of people feel that there has to be a sense of striving or activity to find a health benefit outside, to climb a mountain, to run faster. But there's something very sweet about just sitting in hot water, be it the water itself or the sense of community that we feel from being with other people or other travelers. Some of the conversations that I had with strangers in hot springs are really memorable. Our phones were away.
That is a huge thing. You cannot have your phone with you in a hot tub. And what you just reviewed, when we think even skeptically about the health benefits of going to a thermal hot springs, slowing down, being close to nature, all of these things can add up to wellness in a frazzled world, can't they?
Exactly.
Greta, I would like to close with one destination hot springs that you'd like to highlight. Where's one place where you can just have an experience that you didn't even know was possible?
I would recommend Ponta de Ferreria off São Miguel Island in the Azores.
Right.
And it is such an exhilarating experience. You climb down metal ladders into a volcanic cove that's cut into the ocean. And what that means is that cool water rushes in with each wave and it sucks out thermal water from the source. So when you're in the water, you feel the rush in of cold seawater and the rush out of thermal water. And then if the waves are high that day, you hold onto the ropes and you can feel your body being moved through the ocean almost like strands of kelp on a line. And most of the time, when I photographed people emerging from hot springs, their faces looked relaxed and calm and quiet. And when people emerged from this hot springs, people looked invigorated, like after going to see a rock band or something, like excitable, thrilled. There was a little element of danger to it all, which is also not something you often experience in hot springs.
So you got danger, you got the exhilaration, and you've got this dramatic setting. This is Ponta de Ferraria on the Azores, that Portuguese island's way out in the middle of the Atlantic. And the picture in your book is amazing because it's a volcanic scene. And I suppose you have to get it when the tide is right to get this wonderful tug of war between the heat of the thermal water and the refreshing, bracing coldness of the sea.
Exactly.
And you're just in the middle of that, tossed back and forth.
Yeah. I think that there's something that makes you feel so alive about feeling the contrast between two temperatures. And there's the stark black volcanic rock combined with that foamy, crashing white of the waves. And it's just such a sensory delight to be able to experience all of those things at once.
You know, Greta, this is a great example of how there are so many dimensions of wonder on this planet. And that's the cool thing about your whole passion for hot springs and sharing it with this book. Thank you so much, Greta Rebus. Take care. And I'd love to get, what do you call it when your fingers are all funny after the water?
Pruny fingers.
Pruny fingers. I'd love to get some pruny fingers with you sometime
maybe in
the Azores. Thanks again, Greta.
Thank you, Rick.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton, Kaz Murrah-Hall, and Donna Bardsley at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. Website uploads are by Andrew Wakeling and Sherry Court. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. You'll find more about our guests at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.